International Broadcasting lives on 5085. The Big One, WTWW.
Please stand by as we get ready to launch another episode of this Reality Radio Cafe Cast with your host and my husband, Denny J, K5DCC.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, lift off.
Now grab your glass and get ready to fill it up with some radio on the rocks.
Vehicle's pitching downrange.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, everyone.
Jim, thanks for introducing me to slot antennas yesterday. You got me going. I just shared a real interesting article, our video on YouTube. You probably have already seen it, maybe. I don't know. It was part of Eric's Ham Expo last year, QSO Today.
It's a fascinating concept, isn't it?
It really is.
And you can have a vertical slot antenna that is horizontally polarized and has a gain of about 5 dB.
That is just weird. That's the word you used yesterday. It's just weird.
It is.
Yeah. I was thinking of all kinds of things one could do after watching some of these videos. Like the one guy that was using like aluminum tape on cars.
Yes.
Well, that was so cool.
Yes. It's so fascinating.
It kind of reminds me of the possibilities of putting an antenna in a gutter.
Yes.
Only trouble is, it wouldn't hold much water.
Well, the fellow that presented in our local club meeting, and I'm terrible at names and call letters so far, and I've forgotten. But he designed a slot antenna for the roof of his RV that essentially was two metal plates separated from one another by a few inches, and the bottom plate was magnetically adhered to the roof of the RV, and the antenna essentially was the space between the plates. That was the slot.
Yeah. I've seen a video of that too. Some guy was doing that very low profile on top of his car.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know much about antennas, but this stuff really helps you understand it better, doesn't it?
It does, you can fold them, so yeah. you can put them in a very tight space, to even I guess 6 meters and up. If you fold them. Make them out of copper pipe, and you know, it just looks like a jumble of copper pipe going in and out. They wind up as being cute from afar. They look like a cube of copper pipe going in and out and up and down.
Yeah,
but really, it's just a folded slot antenna.
Yeah. Well, what I thought of when I saw the first description of the slot antenna reminded me of my folded dipole that I used for my QRPCW days. You know, of course, that's a longer wire, but for some of the higher frequencies, yeah, it's just basically like a folded dipole.
Well, I guess technically this would be the inverse of a folded dipole or something.
Something like that. And I guess they use them in our phones. I guess they use slot antennas. I think I saw something about that.
Yes, I think you're right. And the early television towers were slot antennas.
Right. Well, you're a Mac guy. You've had iPhones for years. Remember when they first came out with the side of the phone as the antenna, and they had the little plastic gap or something along the side?
I do.
I suppose basically, that's basically like a slot antenna, isn't it? Kind of.
I would think so.
You've got parallel sides, but that made me think, well, you know, they say the directivity of the slot antenna is only one direction. So I wonder if we kind of move around and turn our phones to get that direction pointing at the tower, if that gets the best reception.
Well, I mean, it can be anything we imagine, right? Because we're just pontificating. It doesn't have to be real.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. Well, welcome to Ham Shack Hotline there, my friend.
Well, thank you. I feel like it's, at the moment, it's just a hotline phone to Denny J.
Yeah. In fact, you got your phone right by you, right?
I do.
Let's see if it works. I hear it ringing.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So
here we get the feedback.
There should be a little bit of latency.
Yeah, I'll turn it off. Yeah. Well, that's pretty slick. I think Daniel wants to get on it too, or who is it? Someone who's not a licensed. Oh, I think it was Andre.
Andre.
He wanted
Andre.
To know if he could get on it. Yeah. Yeah. No, you can't without a license. They've pretty much locked it down. It's only for the ham community. So, hey, another reason to get your license. Go to Ham Test Online and register. They will guarantee you'll get your license or your money back.
Okay. I did a screen snap of the fellow that did the presentation. His name is John Portun. Portune.
Oh.
W6.
He's the one that did it for your club?
Yes.
Oh, John. He's the one that's got the videos all about it, too.
Yes. And I think he's the guy. He's done QST articles on it. Several, as a matter of fact. He's W6NBC. And he has a book that's available on Kindle. That's why I did the screenshot. I want to get that for my Kindle. And the name of the book is Slot Antennas for Ham Radio by John Portun, W6NBC.
Maybe we can get him as a guest.
$4.95. I think I can afford that.
I think so.
And the copy for this, the ad of the book says, slot antennas have been overlooked by ham radio operators since they were introduced in 1938.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think we should send him an email, see if he would like to be a guest on our show here and talk about slot antennas. Put your money in the slot, we'll call it.
Well, the first one he made, it's the cover of his book. He had a direct TV dish, and apparently he lives in a neighborhood that doesn't like antennas like mine. And he actually took a tool and cut a slot in his direct TV dish, and it worked.
Yep. I just shared the video of that, of a guy that built his off of his plan. And this guy is Marcel Stiber, AI6MS. I just shared the video. He was one of the presenters at QSO Today. That's Eric Guth. He wanted to have something for all the people that couldn't get to any big ham fest because they're all closed. So he had a virtual expo last year. He actually asked me if I would like to be one of the presenters, but I turned him down.
Why? But, you love to
anyway, present. This one explains exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I was watching this as Daniel was in here with me listening too, and this guy made a dual band slot antenna out of a DirecTV dish, and he is basing it off of Portun's plans, and walks you through step by step what he did. It's very interesting. I think I now have another use for that HughesNet satellite that I took down, that dish.
Well, yeah, and I was contemplating eventually building a J-pole for 2 meters, and it would probably work on 440. But now I'm kind of more interested in this because it doesn't stick up as high in the air, would draw less attention, and apparently it has more gain. So,
well, you're in one of those situations where this would really come in handy. You can't have antennas in your HOA, can you?
Technically not. I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, just don't hang your laundry out in that long wire. You'll be all right.
Well, I intend to put the one end of the long wire out on an apple tree that's in the commons area by the drainage pond. Mm-hmm. And if anybody complains, the old farm place out of which the subdivision was carved, the guy that lives in that house is real friendly to me. And he has a 65-foot flagpole up in his backyard. And he says, hey, you want to put your antenna on top of my flagpole?
There you go.
And the problem with the flagpole idea, and he has a fence around his property, and the corner of his property abuts my backyard. So if anybody complains about the apple tree, I'll just put up about a 20-foot pole on one of his fence posts, and I'll go right across my backyard, right down his fence line, and that's not on the common property at all.
Ah.
So,
well,
I would have to probably move the other end of the antenna from the chimney, which is kind of on the side of the house, and kind of slants across my backyard to the apple tree. And I'd have to probably move the box at the end of the infit antenna to underneath the roof overhang, so it would line up exactly with the fence line if I have to move it from the apple tree. But I'm planning for plan B.
Yeah.
You've always got to have a plan B.
Well, be careful attaching it to the top of the guy's flagpole if you go that route, because that flag will get up and wrap around your wire.
Well, no, I already dismissed that because the top of the flagpole actually rotates.
Said,
yeah, because the wind blows everything around, and the top connector actually rotates.
Sure.
And that alone would prevent me putting anything on his flagpole, but it was nice of him to offer.
Yeah, and especially if he's like the guy in charge.
He owns that farmhouse. He's got some scrub mulberry trees that are nobody. He actually planted Norway pines around the perimeter of his yard, so he can't even see his fence. And between his Norway pines and his fence, there are some scrub mulberry trees that have grown up, you know, probably birds dropping seeds or something. And they're obstructing my antenna line that I intend to put up. And so I talked to him about that. I said, do you mind if I trim those so that, and of course, if I trimmed them, I'd have to cut that up into small pieces and put about 2 or 3 pieces a week in my trash pickup. I can't, the trash pickup's not going to pick up a tree. So,
no, probably not.
He works in construction, and he said, well, I'll just take them out. I've got a wood chipper.
Yeah, there you go.
But he hasn't got around to it yet, so I may have to do some minor trimming myself, but I won't have to figure out how to dispose of the wood because he volunteered to bring his wood chipper in there. So he doesn't care about those scrub mulberries because he can't even see them. He's looking at his Norway pines. Right.
Daniel just shared a picture of the back of his house there, and he says, can you see the long wire antenna? I can see it just under the eaves there, connecting to the gutter, apparently. How long is your long wire there, Daniel?
Not very long. It's running from my office to the gutter on the garage. It's, just a couple of meters, not very long.
What kind of antenna tuner do you use?
No, I've got no antenna tuner on that one. I've got an antenna tuner on, in the one in my shack that's connected to my Yaesu FRG7700. For that, okay. I use a cable running on the top of that half pole, on the dipole. That's one that I've got an antenna tuner, but not the one.
So this is just for receiving your shortwave stuff, huh?
Yeah, this is purely for shortwave listening. Yeah, it's connected to my Philips DG935. I think I might have showed you a picture of it really already.
Oh, yeah. We've seen it. I love that bay window. I wish we had a bay window. Now, you rent this place or do you own it?
No, my brother from Australia bought it when my mom and I were here, so because we needed somewhere that was wheelchair friendly. But since then, she's passed away and said you can stay as long as you want, as long as you sell the place.
Oh, so he still owns it. Okay. Well, that's nice. Yeah, so,
although I pay the bills and so forth, he still owns it.
Right, right.
So when I see bay windows, I have a rather macabre thought, which I'm sure Daniel might find amusing. This was a news article some decades ago, and it was somewhere in the South. I won't say it's Arkansas, but it's somewhere down there. And so an innovative funeral home realized that Americans leave this fast-paced life. We eat in fast food joints, and we eat while we work, and it's awful, really. Nobody stops to smell the roses, and they realized innovative application of a bay window. So they put a bay window in their funeral home, so people could do drive-by viewings.
Oh dear.
Oh my. Well, that also gives opportunity for those drones to peek in your home better.
Well, they would not be high flying drones.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, Andy is in here. He's been in here since yesterday. I don't know if he's got his microphone figured out where he can unmute. Andy was the guy I was trying to work on that satellite pass yesterday that you listened to there, Jim.
Oh.
He's out there in Seattle, and we did make a contact toward the end, a very short one, but he'll be able to claim Arkansas as a new state, I think. I don't think he's worked anybody in Arkansas before on satellite, so he's trying to amass all those grid squares, you know.
It is an odd state.
Hey! Andy got his mic unmuted. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, gentlemen. I want to feel, this is weird, like a party line or something, but I wanted to know what I was doing before I started doing it.
Well, you're live on the Digicom Cafe Morning Cafe Cast.
Well, good.
Welcome, Andy.
Good morning, Daniel, again. I didn't plan on being up this early, but my schedule got changed. I got to pick up some sensitive materials at the airport today, so I got to get off early to handle that detail.
Yeah, well, it was good to work you on AO91 yesterday. We finally made it.
Yeah, that was awesome. So now I got your grid square, your state, and I'm on my way to my VUCC award. So I'd made 5 contacts in that pass. I think you only heard 1 or 2 of them when you're recording. I should post my recording, but I'm not into that. So,
feel free. Well, while you're here as our guest, we love new people coming in, and those that listen to the podcast, they're kind of surprised by how open our podcast is. I mean, anybody can drop in and join us, and we can ask you questions about what you're doing and how long you've been in ham radio. So, Jim, you got any questions for Andy?
Well, I would just say, I'm impressed. Anybody that can do satellite communication impresses me, because Danny posted a video of his recent satellite efforts, and I can't imagine trying to think that fast. I mean, I just, the coordination of brain and holding the antenna, twisting the antenna, and trying to talk at the same time, it's just it's mind-boggling. I don't think I'll ever try it. I don't think I can do it. But anyway, Andy, how long have you been in ham radio? And apparently you like satellite communication. What's your favorite mode?
Boy, I'm really liking Fusion, but I have a lot of favorite modes. So I've been in ham radio licensed legally 18 years. I'm 56 years old. I've been in a radio, though, since I was a 15-year-old. I still have it, an old tube receiver that came out of a submarine that's been put into a wooden box. And so I just started listening to shortwave and sending shortwave reports and getting those lovely QSL cards. And I like Fusion, like C4FM. I love the satellites, but they're discouraging when they die and our batteries go dead. When it's not really as hard as it sounds, once you start doing it, you know who the main players are and can tell from the afflictions in their voice. And you know who you've gotten and who you haven't gotten. It's that new unique call that you've never heard before that you really want to get. But then if there's a rover out there, you got to yield the airways. Proper etiquette is let that rover get as many contacts as he can. So I may get the rover and then I'll just sit back and listen. But then you'll hear calls that you want really bad. But the rover kind of has prime real estate there. He's the guy to go. If there's no rover there, you just sit back and listen and get in where you can fit in. You don't take over the airwaves like some guys do. That's not fair. You make a contact or two, back off, sit down, listen.
Yeah, and a rover is those guys, they pay money. It costs them money to travel and to get into a grid square that is rare, that people, maybe not any hams live in the area or something. And so they'll jump in their car and they'll travel sometimes hundreds of miles or take a cross-country trip and stop at all of these rare grid squares. And, of course, they have to schedule it with the birds pass. And that way, some of these guys that are trying to get all the grid squares for their awards will be able to work someone there. And then they turn that into LOTW from that location. All that takes a lot of work, takes some money sometimes. And we had a rover yesterday, I think. It wasn't our young gal friend was roving, I believe.
Roger, correct. Kylie, or yeah, she was in something Kylie. 83.
Yeah. And she's only 14 or 15 now, and her dad got her into this. She and her dad do satellites a lot. They're from southern Minnesota. You'd appreciate that, Jim.
But, well, this is fascinating. I suppose it's someday I'll try it before dementia sets in. You guys talking about this reminds me of geocaching, in which people roam all over the place trying to find a particular hidden something or other, and in order to finally find it, they often have to solve a puzzle. And this just reminds me of satellite communication. You're trying to find these locations hidden, these isolated places, and you have to learn a whole bunch of technology to unlock the possibility of making the contact. So you're just the electronic. You're just the electronic version of geocaching.
Well, kind of, and I do that too. But like everybody starts out, just get your HT out there with a rubber duck, tune it to one of the frequencies of the satellite, and get the application. I use ISS detector on my phone, and it tells you when the satellite's coming up. It shows you, you know, all the information you want to know about it, and listen for a while. It's even fun to listen. And then it just blows your mind when you think with a little HT running 2 watts and like a Yagi, like we've got that Aero antenna, it cost maybe $120. You can talk to this little tiny satellite, sometimes no bigger than maybe a little bigger than a Rubik's cube, traveling up through space at the speed of like 17,000 miles an hour, up about 300 miles. And sometimes, of course, when you're way off in the distance, if it's a very low pass, you could be out there 2,500 miles away talking to someone through the repeater that's another 2,500 miles away on the other side of it. That just blows your mind.
It does.
Hey, if I can chime in, you're going to try to do this. Don't use the ISS as your first one. it's a disaster. And why I say that is somebody hears that somebody got on a satellite and he's a ham radio operator and everyone wants to do it and they have no protocol, no clue. They're green and everyone just talks at once or CQ satellite. You don't do that. You got to stay in a pack. You get in, you get out real quick. So I would suggest PO-101 or AO-91 while it's still working to be your first one, because most of those are the seasoned veterans that are looking for that rare call, and they will help you. Another good indicator is Twitter. You can get on Twitter and see where rovers are going to be and who's had successful passes and thanking one another. Thank you, K5DCC, for the contact yesterday. You know, I needed that FM-36 or EM-36. I'm not looking at my records and I don't got it memorized, but with what grid squares, there's 488 grid squares out there. And what's really cool is a rover gets on a line. When a rover gets on a line or a corner, you get two or four grid squares that you never would have gotten. There's 488 in the United States. And you color your map in and it's like stamp collecting. There's 488 stamps out there I need to collect. So I'll set up next one of those K7RTV.
So,
and you can hear when they're transmitting on there, you'll hear them too. They'll give out their call and they'll say, grid line. So, you know, this is two grids for me. So everybody stands in line. But the problem that Andy's talking about, when you get too many people out there trying to talk at the same time, you know what it's like on a FM repeater. If two people are transmitting, that collision and you can't understand anybody. Well, now you've got potentially hundreds of people on this bird trying to work one station. So it can be chaos. And that's why, you know, Andy talks about protocols and etiquette. Listen. And if you hear a gap, then you jump in. If someone calls you, don't wait around. Immediately respond and get out of the way so other people can get in and work that rover. So it's a lot to it.
So Andy, I got my pencil and paper out now. Would you please repeat those satellites you recommended?
The FM birds, because we won't even talk linear. That's a whole different ballgame. PO-101, AO-91.
921.
Best ones. AO-91, Alpha Oscar 91.
Okay.
Those would be the prime ones. SO-50 and AO-27 would be next. Yet I have not been successful as of late on those. I've made a lot of contacts before. But sit and listen to the ISS. The ISS is a 6-minute pass normally, 4 to 6 minutes. You might get a 7-minute pass. It travels at 17,500 miles per hour. So that's a very quick window to make a contact. PO-101 and AO-91, you got 12 to 16-minute passes on those. You get more contacts in there. You get more learning in there. You get more listening in there. Most of the satellites go by every 90 minutes. Yet, however, the Earth is very large. And the rotation and axis doesn't always put it overhead. So for me, yesterday, the satellite was going from Mexico to Canada in between Denny and I. It was a phenomenal pass. I made 5 contacts. And I got my buddy Denny that's been trying to...
Hey, Andy, tell us where you're at right now. Tell us about your job. What do you do? And what a perfect job for doing ham radio, huh?
Well, I get paid, and I get paid to talk radio. I'm a DOD contractor. I'm on Elliott Bay. I'm looking at downtown Seattle, the skyline, the waterfront. It's dark. All the lights are on. Safeco Field, Clink, the stadium for the Seahawks, the stadium for the Mariners. And I got a rifle here and my pistol, and I'm all by myself in a little tent with a heater on. And all I got to do is look out at the waterway, make sure no threats come. I got 2 missile cruisers behind me that I'm their rear guard. If anyone breaks through these barriers and fence, I have to engage them. And it hasn't happened. So I don't want to get bored to death waiting for that attack to happen that may never come, but I'm ready. And I talk radios. I talk satellites. I got American Link fired up in the background. I had to turn that radio down. I put Worldwide 91 on. I have a VHF unit here for Marine. I'm a restricted radio operator. I can legally talk to all the vessels out here, and I can talk to the planes when they fly overhead. So I got an AM radio that I use there. I have 7 radios here. I use them all.
Jim, any more questions?
Well, that about
fire
covers
away.
It. That about covers it. Very interesting.
Well, everybody can talk to Andy at any time, even if they don't have a license, by going to his Zello channel. Why don't you go ahead and introduce our audience to that there, Andy?
Zello is VoIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol, and you do not have to be a ham operator to be on it, and there are tons of channels, and if you get on it and start listening to stupid stuff, you know what? You can change the channel. Don't rate everyone in there as, oh, that's Zello. That's not radio. It's the most clearest, concise digital communications out there. And I'm a cheater. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. And I use my Zello with various other ham operators that are buddies of mine. And it's a backdoor channel. So if we hear some rare Antigua Island and we make a QSO with it and everyone in the world wants that same person, well, we'll contact each other in the back door. And my buddy Ray will like, hey, Andy, I want him. So before I close the call down, I'll say, hey, I got a buddy in New York right now. His call is W2DEA. He would love to talk to you. And all the guys are just ready with his thumb to hit that mic camp because I just passed him off a successful pass off. So my buddy Ray can have that same call. And we do that down the line and it blows people away. They don't know what we're doing. But in the background, we got that little radio going. We're talking back and forth and we're multitasking. Talking to you right now, listening to Ray in the background and setting him up. So Denny can probably explain Zello better. If you're familiar with Peanut, you got to be a ham operator to use Peanut. You don't have to be a ham operator to use Zello. My channel, I have a lot of aspiring hams in it. So you don't have to talk ham, but I prefer it because we want to inspire and mentor the wannabe hams. And the wannabe is not the right word, but you know what I mean? And so they're not lids or tards when they get on to the real ham band. So it's a precursor for them. I've had three successful people go and get their license. We've got another one, if he's in here, in Bulgaria, Romania, who did it once and didn't make it, but he's going to do it again. And I know he's going to make it. I have faith in him. So I need some oxygen. I need some coffee in me. I'll sit back and listen. This is Kilo Echo 7, Romeo Tango Bravo, Elliott Bay, Seattle, Washington, United States of America. And I'll be moderating. Thank you, folks.
Hey, 10-4, good buddy. No, thank you very much. thanks for joining us this morning and jump in anytime. We love hearing what's going on over there and hearing about your experiences. Thanks for apprising me of AO91 coming back online again. I kind of gave up on satellites for the last month or two. There was no activity, so I just hung up my aero antenna and didn't even listen. But we've been busy doing other things here, too, and I'm glad you're exposed now to Telegram and our Telegram voice chat, which gets used a lot. And there's a lot of different groups. Daniel's got his own groups and shares a lot of his devotionals and things, too. Mello's got one. And in fact, he has a Bible study on Tuesday nights. Tonight will be his Bible study at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. So several of us join that. So, I mean, these tools are awesome. And the ham radio community is probably one of the best users of these things. So good to have you this morning. Jim, what's the what-if question of the day? I bet you're just waiting with bated breath to stimulate our brains.
No, I almost forgot. This has been fascinating, at least to me. Well, let me call up my browser here. I got to remind myself what it is. What if we had an endless supply of energy, which we don't now? We are locked into fossil fuels for the near future, and that has got to be something that will eventually run out. We don't know exactly when. But if you have a gas stove, you know, you got to think, well, one day, how am I going to cook if there's no more gas? Or ponder all kinds of scenarios and when we lose energy. So what if there was an endless supply of affordable energy? How would that affect our lives? And how would we get that energy? Do you have any ideas, Denny? Or?
Well, when you first asked that question, I was relating that to being old and not having much energy sometimes. It'd be nice if you and I had an endless supply of energy, wouldn't it?
Well, the answer is apparently, or one answer might be the ocean. And it's going to have to be an increasing acceptance of nuclear power. Or right. As George Bush would say, nuclear. Nuclear.
Nuclear.
Nuclear. That's the way I used to say it, too. In fact, I'm not sure I'm saying it correctly now. Anyway, there's about, scientists estimate there's about 7.6 million tons of uranium on Earth. And it's concentrated in just a few countries. I think 8 countries have the largest uranium reserves, accounting for 80% of the worldwide resources of uranium as an element. And of course, we know the negative consequences of uranium in the atomic bomb, but it's also a source of energy if it can be safely harnessed. That's another issue. But the source of uranium that I'm now talking about comes from the ocean, and there's a new peptide hydrogel material that extracts uranium from the ocean. And of course, many countries around the world have ocean borders. So I find this absolutely fascinating. And it made me look up, well, what the heck is a peptide hydrogel? And
sounds like something you take for constipation.
It's apparently something that's used in tissue regeneration for, you know, it has medical uses, but the particular peptide hydrogel that's used for uranium extraction from the ocean is actually renewable. You can reuse it. So it ponders, you know, one ponders the future of energy, and it might be extracting energy from the ocean that apparently has a pretty endless supply. And you can produce what's called yellowcake uranium, which is used in power generation. So I guess the future of energy use is certainly interesting. We're pondering it, trying to figure out what will happen in the future. We're beginning to harness wind energy, and people are even harnessing ocean waves that can produce energy. There's a lot of research going on, and hydrogel extracting uranium from ocean water is another potential source. So that's the what if. What if we had an endless source of energy?
Which reminds me of the free energy concepts. Have you seen some of the interesting videos on YouTube? Perpetual energy, you know, it comes from motion, but some of these things, they talk about this endless loop of energy that feeds on themselves to turn a generator and create more energy. A lot of people say that's just a big scam. But
wouldn't ocean waves be an example of that? Because there's always waves in the ocean, and that right. can turn something. And if something turns, then it can produce electricity.
Right. Or dams with water flowing over them.
Sure. Well, an example.
Now, when we moved here to Arkansas, we wanted to be energy independent. And so we researched a lot of the stuff, wind power, solar power. And we even have our own generator and stuff. But I've landed on solar as probably being the most reliable. We pretty much always have sun. Wind, we put up a wind generator It was one of those homemade projects made out of PVC pipe that was cut into the blades, you know, and
had
a generator on the end.
Yeah.
Kind of a DIY project. And we use that, we're going to use that to power and run our repeater here locally. Well, we didn't get enough wind to really make much energy. And when we did, it was too strong and broke the blades. So I gave up on that idea. But we did have solar. We had three solar panels, 100-watt solar panels. And they were going through the charge controller, charging up our batteries, which ran our repeater for years without any issues at all. So I do think solar is our biggest source of energy.
So do you have a river running through your backyard?
Not through the backyard, no.
Can you divert a river from somewhere to run it through your backyard?
No, we're on top of the hill, so.
Well.
The valley, that's where the river is, down in the valley.
Down in the holler. Well.
Down in the holler.
Of course, people, the way people used to grind wheat into flour was you find a stream and put a wheel in the stream and have the wheel turn the grinding stones. And I was hearing all of your energy independence maneuvers. I thought, well, that's just something that you should invent. You should have a river running through your backyard so you can grind your own flour from the wheat you're growing across this fence.
Yep. Well, we have given it lots of thought.
I'm fascinated by what you've done. That, of course, is... It's absolutely intriguing. You're much more self-sufficient than most of us.
Yeah, we don't worry too much up here. Of course, there's always a limit. I mean, if we were without power for an extended period of time, our LP gas would run out and we wouldn't have power generator. That's why we have a simple pump, old hand pump that we can pump water that we would need to survive. So I no longer have a repeater, so I'm not worried about that. But I do have short-term backup. We have a couple of UPSs here in the house, and I've got most of my stuff in the shack running through one, which has a battery. So if and when our generator gave up the ghost and we're out of power, they would last at least for a while to get out an emergency call or something with my radio gear. So yeah, we've gone through this whole what-if scenario for years since we moved here. You know, what if this happens? How are we going to do this? You know, and think through it, prepare for it. And so now we feel pretty secure. We don't worry about things too much. We just enjoy life.
So your uninterruptible power sources, when they kick in, does it produce a very high-pitched, obnoxious sound so that you know that they're on?
No. The fan comes on in my UPS. It's right under my desk here.
Oh.
And
well, I'm talking about...
Yeah, the light will be there, and it'll light up. You'll know that it's on. But all my radio gear.
So they don't produce any obnoxious sounds at all when they kick in? If they don't, you can't. I won't even tell this story then, because you couldn't relate to it.
Oh, give me a chance.
Well... Most of the uninterruptible power sources that one would hook a home computer to or an office computer to, when the power goes off and these UPSs kick in, they produce a very obnoxious, high-pitched whine to let you know that you're on battery power. And so you can shut your computer down safely while waiting for the power to come back on. Well, I'm working in my office at Indiana University at Indianapolis, IUPUI. And my office door was always open. So it was open to the hallway. And both of my hearing aids were in for repair. So I was not wearing hearing aids. And I'm working at my computer. And the computer screen goes dark for a couple of seconds. And then the computer started rebooting, and eventually the screen came back up, and I was back working again. the power in our building had gone off very briefly, a couple of seconds. And pretty soon I look up, and there's about 15 people outside my door in the hallway. I was kind of amazed, and I said, can I help you? And somebody said, how can you work in all that noise? And I said, what noise?
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. And finally, I saw the little red light blinking on the UPS underneath my desk, and I realized what had happened. The UPS had gone off, and the particular UPSs of that generation really made an annoying sound to let you know audibly that they'd gone off, so that you could shut your equipment down in a safe manner while waiting for the power to come back on. And so it was way tucked under my desk. I had to get on my hands and knees and crawl back to reset it. And when my head was like a foot away from it, I could just barely hear it in a the most faint sound, because normally, particularly for men, the hearing loss is in the high frequencies. And so with both hearing aids out, I just couldn't hear it. But everybody else on the entire floor of the building heard it.
Oh, wow. Well, when the power goes out here, we do have a loud noise, and that's our generator. And it's right outside the shack window here. So we can tell when that's kicked in. But once you're inside the house more, you don't notice it very much. And really, the UPSs are more for a surge protection. If you get a lightning charge coming in without that, it'll blow up all your circuitry pretty easily. But that is kind of an intermediate spot where it catches that and protects your equipment and keeps it running. So if you're in the middle of a project on your computer, you're not going to lose it. It gives you plenty of time to shut down. But that generator, that was a real lifesaver getting that in here, because we've had times where the power's gone out for, you know, hours, and we just let that thing run. We don't even notice any difference inside. Only trouble is the rest of the community is dark, and they hear this motor running, this engine running. So they know where the power's at. Hey, Johnson's got light up on their hill. What's going on up there? But that was a project. We installed that ourselves and put in a new breaker box and the switch over, and it just works beautifully. Love it.
Well, someday I'm going to have to make a visit and just see all this intriguing technology you've wired up.
We'd love it. You're always welcome. Bring your wife along. Sorry, no gaming allowed here.
So, speaking of office sounds, you're reminding me, or I'm reminding myself, actually, of a trick I played. I guess I have a reputation of a prankster. But at one point, I found something I could buy that was, not much bigger than a postage stamp, maybe as big as two postage stamps. And it was a little circuit board, and it had a little tiny speaker on it, little tiny switches, and a battery, and a magnet. So what you could do is you could go into a colleague's office, and of course office desks are typically made out of steel, filing cabinets are made out of steel. So you could use the magnet on this little circuit board to plop this thing behind a filing cabinet or underneath a desk somewhere. And what it would do on a random basis is it would emit sounds that sounded like your hard drive was about to crash. But it wouldn't emit the sound continuously. It would just every few minutes emit the sound. In fact, it didn't emit the sound long enough that you could even figure out where the sound was coming from. But everyone assumed that it was coming from their hard drive about to crash. That's what I used
you're
to
do. Something else.
That's what I used to do for fun.
You know, maybe you should stay in Indianapolis. I'm just kidding. I'm afraid to experience your fun aspect of life. Oh my. Anyway, well, did you see that little link I shared, the video link there about free energy? Have you ever seen those kind of things?
Oh, let me check this out.
You know, using magnets and coils, you can create perpetual motion, supposedly. Now, I've talked to friends of mine who are you know, very, very bright, brilliant MIT kind of guys, and they just laugh at this stuff. This is all bogus. But if you see some of these videos, they show these things just running and running and running, self-propelled by their own energy that they create, and somehow they say that you're able to siphon off some of that energy to run some of your devices and things. It's quite a fascinating study.
Yeah, but you're still
this thing here is just using.
You're still siphoning off. There's still some loss. There has to be some loss.
Right. It's quite interesting, though. Well, we've had Bob Havenstraight in here for quite a while, just patiently in the background. He likes to jump in and learn.
What's going
Bob,
on,
do you
Bob?
Have any comments about the what-if question?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. First thought I thought of was the electric companies probably wouldn't like that very well. No more electric bills. We could get free energy. But, yeah, I was thinking of the water, the oceans. I've seen those machines that collect energy from even the tides going up and down and the waves, you know. I think there's ways we could get free energy, but if people aren't making money on it somewhere or another, they, you know, they probably downplay it. But I think Tesla even had some ideas of how each one of us could have enough energy, you know, to run our houses and everything just free. I'm not sure exactly how it worked or anything, but I'm sure the big businesses are making lots of money from electric bills every month. But it'd be nice. I think there's ways we could do it. You know, there's ideas out there that where each house could have free energy. It'd be nice not having an electric bill, right?
And it's gone up, hasn't it?
Tesla, yeah. I know, was working on creating roof tiles that looked just like any other roofing tile, that you could roof your house with the Tesla tiles and produce electricity that way. And I'm not sure that project ever came to fruition, but that was one idea Tesla was floating.
He's brilliant. So I know, Bob, you're kind of a prepper. You guys have researched all the what-ifs, I think, too, as we may have discussed at our club meeting the other night where we were talking about what if we had an EMP and things. So what have you come up with to support your lifestyle there, kind of in the suburbs of Bergman or right there in Bergman? Have you solar energy? Or
I think I kind of go back to basics. You know, we just bring out our gas lanterns, and we've got a propane stove. It'll last a while, but you know, I mean, I think for me, I just have to pretty much go back to basics. You know, like if you had to build a fire to cook with, I mean, we've got plenty of oak trees around here, and gas lanterns. You know, as long as you had kerosene or something to, you know, fuel them with. But then I do have some 12 volt power, you know, that I keep charged up with solar. So, you know, we could go quite a while there without electricity if we had to.
So Jim, what are you doing to prepare for the what if situations there? I mean, you've got everything you need right now, but what if the grid were to shut down? How would you survive?
Well, that is a problem. Right now I'm focused on getting a high frequency rig and getting an antenna up.
So you jump on there and say, help, help.
We have in the Midwest, we have ice storms. That and freezing rain that produces ice, and when the power lines get freezing rain on them, that always causes outages, and they often last for a couple of days anyway, sometimes longer. And that is a problem. I have begun investigation into how I can put an alternative switch next to my circuit breaker box in the garage and hook up a gasoline generator to that. In a suburban neighborhood, I think that's practical. And we have, I don't think our power has ever been out for very long. Usually it's less than a day. And so a gasoline generator hooked up to a switching box so that I could just, I don't have to have every circuit in the house activated under a power loss, but I could pick the particular breakers like that run the freezer, the refrigerator, the hot water heater, that kind of thing. I could put on a gasoline generator. I've been pondering that, and probably when I get my ham stuff up and working, and I've made my first satellite contact, then I will start investigating alternative power sources.
If you want to practice, why don't you work Andy right here? Let's see a quick exchange.
Kilo Echo 7, Romeo Tango Bravo, Charlie November 87.
Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead. Work him.
What's? I'm confused. What's happening here?
We're practicing a satellite operation. So he just threw out his call as grid square. So you have to respond really quick.
Well, see, I couldn't even copy the call. That's.
Oh,
Kilo Echo 7, Romeo Tango Bravo, Charlie November 87.
Romeo Tango.
Again.
Oh, no. Please repeat. I'm a lid.
Okay. It's again. Or Kilo Echo. Again. Kilo Echo 7, Romeo Tango Bravo, Charlie November 87.
Kilo Echo 7, Romeo Tango Bravo. This is Whiskey Zero, Romeo Lima Delta, and I don't know what my grid number is.
Roger. QSL, Charlie November, 87.
KE7, RTB, K5DCC, Echo Mike 36.
QSL, Charlie November, 87.
QSL, thank you.
You guys are driving me nuts.
What's all the background noise there, Andy?
These gosh darn sea lions. There's about 20 of them out here right now.
Oh, wow.
tell them to shut up. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, I did not get confirmation. I've got 4/12/21 at 1740 satellite FM.
You know, it may be that I got my UTC time wrong. I'll have to go back in there and double check it. Probably repost it. We'll get you confirmed.
Okay, thank you, sir. And
yeah, betcha.
Roger. Yeah, no, the satellites. you say again if you want something. Once you get their grid square and they get your grid square, it's QSL. Thank you very much, 73, and you go to the next satellite or the next party on the satellite.
Okay, I'm making notes here. And in fact, while we're talking, I'm going to look up my grid number. I looked it up the other day, but I've already forgotten it. So I'm going to do that.
It should be on your QRZ page.
Yes, I know that. I actually know that.
Mr. Brown.
Yes.
Go to my log, my call, Kilo Echo 7, Romeo Tango Bravo. And I have a very excellent article from KX9X. That is best practices.
It will show you the do's and don'ts in a quick.
I got it already. I see it. And bang, I'm going to, there it is. And I'm clicking the download button. I've already got it. Thank you very much for that.
Roger, Roger, and feel free to send me a email or send me an email. I'll give you my phone number and I'll help you. It's not that inundating. Denny helped me. I have a few other hams that helped me. And Denny really helped me with packet. And I made a successful packet contact yesterday. I confirmed it via email and I just logged on LOTW. So you can do FM voice and you can do APRS. And APRS via the ISS is a total different frequency. So you need a different frequency and you need a different wide 1-2 or whatever that you, the method that you put in protocol into your radio has to be different than the normal APRS in the United States.
Oh, okay. So what motorcycle do you have?
Currently I have quite a few. And a 2003 Harley Davidson FHLTPI police cycle complete with lights and sirens, but the lights are clear so I can ride it around whenever. And, but somebody, you know, I did escorts, but I haven't taken my emergency equipment off. I'm a licensed emergency vehicle operator. And occasionally I help fill in, on the Seahawks and law enforcement funerals. So I'm gonna leave my stuff on my bike.
I have a BMW GSA, R1200 GSA.
I had the RT 1250. I've had Kawasaki KZ1000s, all police bikes. And I've had buddies get killed on them. And my new motto is ride slow and look cool.
Oh,
well, so, Andy, I'm looking at our contact here. I've got for my time as 17:02. Was that the wrong time? UTC?
Yeah, that's the wrong time. The bird wasn't even around until 17:30 something. So you just make it 17:30. It's got to be within half hour, and we're outside that half hour window.
Right, right, right. I will update that. And hopefully get that confirmed for you.
I think you have to make a new entry. You're not able to change your entry.
I do, yeah. Right, I'll have to go and put a new one up.
Okay, and I looked at my awards. I have 43 grids for the VUCC award, so I need 100. And I'm at 26 confirmed states, so you'll give me 27, and I will be at it.
Do you have Echo Mike 7-9?
I do not believe that I do. I'm pulling my map up right now. And Echo Mike, Echo November. Echo Mike, you said 7-9?
7-9.
I do not have 7-9. I have 70, 69 above you and to your left. I've heard people from Echo Mike 7-9, but I've never made a successful contact. I got a color-coded grid map. Green, red, yellow, and blue. Red is I heard somebody from that area. Green is a confirmed contact. Yellow is a contact, but they haven't confirmed it. And purple is packet radio contacts. And they all qualify for the ARRL VUCC awards.
Ah. Well, then I'd better get on pretty soon so you can get 70 EM79.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'm looking at today's passes right now. And standby one. And I have to echo Denny. ISS detector, I think, is far best go-to detector out of all of them there. And I highly recommend that one. AO91 passes over me at 9:28 a.m. It's a 4-degree pass. Maximum elevation, and it is coming from Canada down to Wisconsin, where the Great Lakes are. And so I'll get all of Canada and the northern half of the eastern seaboard there.
Mm.
Are you getting hooked yet?
Well, I'm intrigued. I still don't know if my brain can process. I got to read this document that I downloaded from Andy. about best practices and see if I can get my brain can follow that.
And something we didn't talk about that we need to talk about so you don't get discouraged is Doppler shift.
Yeah, Denny's talked about that and how you've got to have a bunch of transmit frequencies programmed into your radio so you can shift the frequency as the satellite passes. That alone boggles the mind.
Well, it boggled my mind too, but if you've ever been near railroad tracks and heard a train whistle and you hear it on one end and then once it gets mid pass or clear past you, it sounds different in each of those areas. Doppler shift is in the same way. It's normally easily affected. It's only on the UHF side. It's not on the VHF side. So on birds that are 2 meter in and a 70 centimeter out, like the ISS, I have 5 channel allocations in my Yaesu FT3 Delta Romeo. And in regards to Doppler shift, it's 0.005 change. So 0.005, 10, 15. I have the main listed frequency in channel space 3. And then I got channel 2, channel 1, and channel 4, channel 5 are the 255 offsets. So you can audibly hear it. And then when you hear it going away, you go to the next channel and you got it back again. So it's relatively easy. And if I break it down on that term, I think.
I got your record updated. So that should go through.
Thank you very much, sir. I'll check you now.
This has been a very informative conversation this morning.
Well, your assignment for today, Professor Jim, is to program your handheld radio on the receive frequency of these various birds that we've been talking about, PO101, AO91, and listen, just listen. And, you know, Andy was talking about earlier not being successful at working AO27 and SO50. The reason is because the frequencies are reversed from the ones we like. The ones we like are the ones you receive on the VHF side and transmit on the UHF side. Those other birds, you flip that around. You're receiving on the UHF and transmitting on the VHF. So you're actually changing for Doppler on the receive side. So you'll have 5 channels in your radio. And on the receive side, you'll be early on, it will be higher. And then you're stepping down to the mid, where if it's you're like perpendicular to it, and then you go low as it's going away from you. But the signals on the UHF receive side are very weak usually, and very hard to hear.
Where do I go to find these frequencies?
AMSAT.org.
What was it again? AMSAT. Right.
AMSAT Alpha Mexico. SAT Sierra Alpha Tango .org. And okay. Confirmation came through. Thank you very much. Solid copy. I'm logging it in my maps and charts right now. Thank you.
So if you just do a Google search for AO91 or PO-101, it'll take you to the AMSAT page where it shows you all the frequencies that you want to program into your radio. Or if you download ISS Detector on your phone, and then when you set up the satellites you want to follow, you know, look for AO91 and add that. Look up PO101 and add that. The ISS should be automatically in the list. And when you go to a particular pass, it gives you all the details about that pass. And if you scroll further down, you will see the frequencies that are used for that particular bird. So
I also learned yesterday that AO27 is only a 4-minute pass, and it comes in at 32 parallel and goes out at the 44th parallel. So central United States, but not north into Canada and not south into Mexico. So that was a problem I was having too, not knowing that bird specifically turned on specific latitude, longitudes.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And if you want, use your phone to record those passes so you can start jotting down those call signs. they're very familiar. A lot of guys are just regular. It's like they have no other life outside of satellites. They're on almost every pass. And you can see them in their home schedule like, oh, I got a pass, got to run outside. Ask my wife. She knows what it's like.
But it seems to me that there's a, after being inactive for decades, there's a whole lot of stuff I've got to do in the chain of events. For example, I've got to get the logbook of the world activated. I've got to get my computer back from repair so I can actually upload to logbook of the world. So there's a lot of stuff that has to happen before I can actually try to make a contact.
And here you thought being 75 was getting boring.
Well, that I was 75 last Saturday. I'm 76 now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll make sure you have a lot to live for here.
Oh, feel free to reach out to me anytime, and you'll be hooked. You start getting some confirmed calls on LOTW, and you'll be hooked. I got an empty map here that I'm trying to fill up. Now I got a nice green square in the middle of the United States from Arkansas. So that's one more state down.
What's the farthest contact you've made on the bird so far?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. My very first farthest contact was in the center of Mexico, below the Tropic of Cancer. I then also had Hawaii, Bravo Kilo 29. Thank you to W7LT. And then I also have Fairbanks, Alaska. And then just last week, I got Nova Scotia, Canada, which is past New York and up above, all on 5 watts and on a satellite.
Isn't that amazing?
I did a motorcycle trip in Nova Scotia once with my wife. It was just wonderful.
I bet you weren't traveling 17,000 miles an hour, though.
No, in Canada, you can be nailed by the cops. In fact, Canada does not allow radar detectors. And at one place we stayed in Canada, I think, yes, this was in Nova Scotia. We were staying at a B&B. And there was a young couple there who wanted to look at my motorcycle. And he looked it over and said, "Well, you use a radar detector, eh?" And I said, "Well, I have one, but I don't use it in Canada." And he says, "Oh, that's good." And I said, "By the way, how did you know I had a radar detector?" And he says, "Well, I'm a Mountie, and I look for the radar detectors are often held to our windshields with little suction cups that you lick and stick up on your windshield. And the Mounties know to look for the little circle that those suction cups leave."
Smart.
At any rate, that was a fascinating trip. And the interesting thing about Nova Scotia, there's the Bay of Fundy. And when the tide goes out, the river that comes into the Bay of Fundy, the water flows out. When the tide comes back in, the direction of water flow in the river changes. The returning tide is so quick and so powerful, it changes the water flow direction in the river that feeds the bay. And some people find that when the tide is out, they like to climb down the rocks and get out in the bottom of the bay. And unfortunately, they can't, when the tide comes back in, they can't get out fast enough and they perish. It's just a very dangerous situation. You do not want to be down on the bottom of that bay when the tide is out.
Sounds like a source of perpetual power.
It does, doesn't it? But you'd have to have rotors that could change direction because the flow of the water changes.
It's kind of like our podcast. It changes flow regularly. I hope everybody follows our train of thought here as we kind of bounce from one thing to the next. I hope you pulled something out of this that's beneficial and useful to your hobby. And hopefully you'll get out there and get active and make some contacts. It's been an extra long episode here today. Thank you, Andy, for joining us, for sharing your ham radio experience in satellite operations.
Thank you for having me. You got me a granola bar in my mouth. But thank you. finally, I got on one of these programs that works, and I'll try to contribute. Get in where I can fit in. K7RTB.
K7RTB. K5DCC. Echo Mike 36.
USL, Charlie November, 87. 73.
73, thank you.
I already forgot ahead, my Jim. Grid number. I already forgot my grid number. 73, Andy, great we've to meet
heard,
you.
We've heard people.
Roger, Roger. I had that problem at first, so I always have a notepad out there, and I write it in big 3-inch letters, Charlie November, 87. And I can always look to that because your mind gets going. You're trying to listen to the call and pick a call. You got two people at once. You want the stronger call. You get his call out there. He calls back. In a perfect world, everyone shuts up so you can complete the QSO. However, the bird is spinning and traveling at 17,500 miles an hour. And occasionally the receive antenna is on the opposite end and you can't hit it until it spins around and gets back in position. So you get bits and pieces. Highly recommended to have a recorder or a radio that will record the receive. So you know you got it. You can come back to it later or hear his previous contact with someone else and pick out one of the letters that you didn't pick out clearly.
So I have an ICOM ID51, and I think that does record.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And that's a dual band. You could use that for satellite.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But it's not full duplex, so.
No. Well, you know, the contacts I made yesterday, believe it or not, I made with one radio. I didn't have a duplex. I was just using a Baofeng UV-82, and I made 7 contacts.
I do not use full duplex. I've made over 200 contacts with this Kenwood, Yaesu FT3 Delta Romeo.
So there you go. So, folks, thank you for joining us today, and this is Tuesday, April 13th. Appreciate your being here. Glad Andy dropped in, Bob. But anyway, if you guys want to join us, all the links are in the show notes there on your podcast platform. We'd love to hear from you and hear your story. So 73, stay radioactive.
73.
Roger, Roger, stay safe. Stay positive. Test negative. K7RTB. United States of America.
I love that. Stay positive, test negative. I love that.
All right.
Roger, Roger.
We'll do this again tomorrow.
Stay safe, stay positive, and test negative. And here's another very important thing about satellites, the 7 P's. You know the 7 P's?
I do not.
Prior proper planning prevents piss poor performance. I live by it.
Exactly. All right. Good day, folks. Come back again tomorrow. Hi, this is Extra Class Amateur Radio Operator, K5DCC. I just upgraded to my Extra Class last year. You know how I did it? I used HamTest Online. Did you know that HamTest Online is the top-rated study program on eham.net? 97% of reviewers gave them 5 stars. They have more 5-star user reviews than all other study methods combined, and success is guaranteed. If you fail the amateur radio license exam, they will refund your subscription. It's a no-brainer. You pass the exam or get a full refund. Try it for yourself at hamtestonline.com. Hello, cafeers. Denny J here. In the beautiful Ozarks of Northwest Arkansas, out in the country, 25 miles from any large city. Out here in the country, we struggle to get good internet. Maybe you have the same problem. If you live in a rural area, you don't have many options. It's either satellite or DSL or cellular. And believe me, we've tried them all. Just recently, I was more than happy to pay the penalty to get out of our satellite service. Latency was horrible, and for amateur radio communications, the delays were up to 5 seconds, and you probably experienced what that's like. Our DSL service was also very unreliable. We rarely got the speeds that we were promised, and it kept dropping out. But now I think I found a service that we're going to love. It's called Visible.com. It's a company that's owned by Verizon and kind of a pared-back service, but works beautifully for my situation here out in the country on 15 acres. Visible.com offers only one plan. It's unlimited everything. Unlimited calls, text, and internet at slightly slower speeds than their top drawer plan at Verizon. But it does use the Verizon network. Go to Visible.com and use my referral code 3NOVEMBER37NOVEMBERTANGO. Also, to get your $40 a month bill reduced to $25, you need to be part of a party pay group. You can join me in our Digicom Cafe party. You will find the link to these things down in the show notes here, along with links to our Digicom Cafe community portal, which is a Facebook alternative. Also, our Telegram community, where we have text and voice chat, and also our live cafe cast here in the Digicom Cafe. So get your line at visible.com. And again, use my referral code and join our party to get that bill down to $25 a month.
Thank you for listening to this Radio on the Rocks Cafe cast. We invite you to join our mighty network's amateur radio community at members.digicomcafe.com.